Good Saturday afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Matt Crowe do his Clint Eastwood impression or his Don Corleone impression, whatever you want to choose there. Got in the studio Dr. Brian Carr, who's the chairman of the Lubbock Board of Health. And Dr. Carr, of course, is running for District 5, the city council seat. And Monday's a big day, isn't it?
Yeah, it really kicks off for three different districts in the city as well as the school board.
Now, early voting starts Monday. The election's May 10th. What do you plan on doing between now and May 10th to win?
Well, we've got kind of a three-prong approach. One is we've got door hangers that we're going out because I don't have the campaign war chest that my opponent has, so we're kind of reaching it with people. And the second thing is to go out and do phone banking, just good old politics, calling people up and asking them to get out and vote. And then the third is to just go along and try to stay in connection with the media like yourself and just try to get the word out.
I want to take kind of a 180 for a second because I think a person's background is important to why they're in politics or why they want to get in politics and so forth and life experiences. Tell me a little bit about why you got into medicine. What drove you to do that?
Well, growing up in my family, my dad's a pediatrician here. If you were a kid growing up in Lubbock between 52 and 92, chances are at some point that you went down to Children's Clinic on Avenue Q and he probably put stitches in your head. Growing up, I knew I wanted to do something in healthcare. I have an older brother who's an orthopedic surgeon here, have a younger sister who is a ICU critical care nurse. And along the way, I was at Texas Tech and was sort of pre-med, but it just didn't quite catch my passion. But then I took a class in experimental methodology, and we learned how to teach little white rats to do things. And I thought that was really fascinating, and here I am today.
You're up to your neck in medicine and medical delivery. What do you think Obamacare is going to do to the future of medical care in this country?
Well, I think first off, we have to start with a premise that the existing system had terrible problems. It was becoming more and more of the GMP and the money that was being spent. And so I think we had to do something. That's the point. I think we can all reach an agreement. Is Obamacare the solution? Are there further revisions that need to be made? I think so. I think we need to address issues of costs and not just how we're going to pay for things. And so it's a step, and I just think that we need to just continue to stay at it and continue to try to find new and innovative ways to deliver care.
You put your finger on it. Everybody I've talked to, either in West Texas or Washington, D.C., has said that something needed to be done, but maybe this wasn't necessarily the way to do it or the proper time. I just saw the news last night that the state of Oregon is going to ditch their state-funded health insurance network, I guess, and go to the feds to help them run Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act in Oregon. And do you think the media has focused too closely on the mechanics of the whole process, the problem they had in getting the website going and people enrolling versus the bottom line, the root cause that healthcare was too expensive and not accessible to enough people?
Well, I think it's such a massive problem that part of the difficulty is people's eyes just kind of glazed over as these things came about. But, you know, if we shrink it down to the local level, as a member of the Board of Health, that, for example, looking at immunizations, that you've heard recently about the rise. We've had this outbreak of mumps at Ohio State University. We're seeing diseases, measles, things like that we haven't seen in decades. And so here locally, to appreciate that we really need to reach out into this community and offer these immunizations where people are at. That's why we got a mobile van a couple of years ago. And the reason is because one day in the NICU over at UMC is about $10,000. So if you have one child who doesn't get immunized for pertussis or what's known as whooping cough, that one day, 2 days, 3 days in, and pretty soon that means that all the people in Lubbock who are part of the Lubbock County Hospital District are going to pay that cost. And so we need to get to the front end and make our system not a, you know, we call it a healthcare system. It's really a sick care system. We need to make it a healthcare system and get preventative, reach out to people and prevent stuff because that's always a lot cheaper. So if we can keep that focus and then keep it where people can understand it and participate in it, then I think that's going to be the real key.
What's your perspective of how well Lubbock deals with public health?
Oh, I think that you could always do better. I've been a scrapper for so many years, a lot of nonprofits and things. I'll never say that we have enough of anything, that we need more, but we need to be smart about it. And so I think the idea of how we reach out and do public education, which then prevents the problem in the first place, is the ultimate cause. And we've suffered, admittedly, because we've at times had councils that, you know, in 2011, they tried to close the health department. And that was something which I rallied the people up against. And so we just need some people who are a little bit smarter.
What was the statistic that I saw in the news? I think it was a few months ago now, that said that Lubbock suffers from a higher STD rate per capita than most other communities do in Texas. Is that accurate?
Well, unfortunately, Lubbock leads the trend on several different statistics. We are consistently one or two rated in the state for child abuse. We are 187% above the state average for STDs. And I think that these are problems which, again, the trouble is that if we ignore them, that, you know, we lead the United States in 10 to 12 year old pregnancies. And those are not promiscuous 10 to 12 year olds. Those are children who have been molested and have end up pregnant. And we could do so much better if we can just get mobilization of effort.
If you get on the city council, how are you going to affect issues like public health, like infrastructure, water and power? Those are items that are going to cost money. And arguably, the city's in debt over $1 billion. Some would argue that that's not a huge issue, it's a manageable issue, so forth. What do you personally plan on doing when you get to the city council to address those huge issues?
Well, I think the years on the board, we've demonstrated that I always saw the Board of Health as the research arm for the city. That when you gave us a task, that we would show due diligence and we would interview and meet with a variety of experts. And so that's what I'd bring first off to the council, is a real studied approach about these issues. And I think that too often what I've seen is people, they have a group of experts that tell them what to do, and then all they do is they say, well, that's what the experts say. Now, I respect expertise, but at the same time, to come to my own decision about things, to research them, and I think that you're right. We're talking about adding up to possibly $1 billion more to our debt. And so this is not a time to just let anybody get in there and try to make issue of it.
For the uninitiated, where is District 5?
District 5 is kind of cobbled together. It's primarily to the southwest of the city, outside of the loop between Quaker and all the way almost to Wolforth. It also includes LCU and some other areas a little bit further to the north. But it's a very vibrant part of the city. It's growing very quickly, and there's a lot of people that I hope are listening, because a lot of things happening.
I asked Victor Hernandez this when he was on the show a few weeks ago. My impression is sometimes that there is a kind of a balkanization going on in Lubbock. You've got the southwest part of town growing dramatically. Homes are being built at a fast rate. Then you have the northeast part of town and the east part of town, which seems to perpetually be saying that they don't get enough services, that their roads are terrible, crime is high, and so forth. Are we heading towards a have and have nots here in this town? How do you see that?
Well, I guess I'd slice a little bit different, and I think this really is seen in this particular district race, and that is, there's a small group of individuals who are very moneyed, who are putting money into this, so that now, in effect, my district race is the most expensive district race in the history of the city. And I think it's those special interests, and then there's like everybody else. And so I think that's part of the concern, is that for, you know, there's one individual gave $10,000 to my opponent. And, you know, I think you got to ask, smacks of crony capitalism, of access, if not a vote. And I think that that's the biggest concern I have, is that are people feeling like they're disenfranchised, that they no longer really get paid much attention. And so that's the first division now. And so that runs across the city, because there are people, a lot of people in this district who are struggling just to make it by on a fixed income. And then you certainly see across the city other ones who are just faced, you know, the high water bills, high electric bills. And so that is a division that I can see us having, and it's going to get worse if we, you know, don't wake up and realize that there are people out there that want to buy elections.
We're going to go to the break pretty soon. I want to come back to campaign finance and talk a little bit about that, because not only you, but some other people have made this an issue in this campaign, and it is turning into quite an expensive campaign for city council, something I don't think a lot of people thought would happen, but it is. Are you generally happy right now with the way the city council operates? I mean, just as far as the mechanics are concerned.
I think we have a good people on the council that they make their best effort. I think there's some controversy at times, particularly between LPNL and the city council. But all in all, I would say they're passing the course.
They seem like they get along pretty well. We come back with Dr. Brian Carr. He's running for District 5 for the Lubbock City Council. You're listening to the Matt Crow Show on News Talk 790 KFYO. Well, good Saturday afternoon, everybody. It's Matt Crow back on the Matt Crow Show. I appreciate you putting up with my raspy voice for another day. I promise by next week I'll be back in the pink, hopefully. I was telling Dr. Carr, I think one of the things I'm going to have to do when I go out to play golf is wear one of those masks. I don't know how effective those are, keeping particles out of your lungs. Do they work?
It couldn't hurt.
Okay. Listen, I've got it. You know, got to ask while you're sitting here. You're running for District 5, Southwest Lubbock, definitely one of the kind of up-and-coming neighborhoods, communities here in West Texas. And my gosh, you know, as I drive around your district, it's starting to look a little bit like Scottsdale. I mean, you got new shopping malls, new strip shopping malls. You got beautiful sidewalks and landscaping and brand new roads. And these homes are gorgeous out there and so forth. What do you think is the future of this town as far as, you know, kind of take a 25,000-foot view of it? Are we going to become another Scottsdale? Are we just going to keep growing into this wild suburban mass out there and absorb Wolfert and, you know, every town?
Well, yeah, I mean, Lubbock's growing. I think it's becoming certainly a hub of medicine and healthcare for probably 200, 300 miles around. I think the same for when you look at our educational institutions like Tech and LCU and Wayland, South Plains, that we will continue to be that draw as things concentrate and centralize. Now, the concern is going to be where are we going to get water, where are we going to get electricity, and those are, I think, what people may not realize is that this is not some problem far down the road, that in water, we're talking about a problem in about 10 years. In electricity, we're talking about a problem in less than 10 years. And so I'm an optimist. Couldn't do my work as a psychologist all these years if I didn't like to think that there's a bright future. But we're going to have to work on it and get together and make some things happen.
You used the phrase war chest a few minutes ago when we were talking about campaign contributions and so forth. And it seems like the West Texas Builders Association has been made out on a couple of occasions by people as being kind of a influence peddler in this town. And I went to an event that they had last week, and I was struck by something very interesting. The people who showed up for the event were not only the business owners who build the homes and so forth, but they were also the carpenters and the drywallers and the brick masons and guys that, you know, work with their hands every day out in the sun. Do you think that those people are trying to buy influence in this campaign, or do you think those people are exercising kind of a legal right in the United States to contribute to candidates who they share a common philosophy with?
Well, I think Larry Driscoll, who is the president of the Homeowner Association, or the West Texas Builders, he makes a good point, which he represents. He said 700 members are in his organization. But also I'd call attention to the fact that they gave $500 to my opponent, which is 10% of her money. Well, if you look at the other 90% of her money, it's not an association of 700 people. It's this family, that family, people whose names are well known. And I think that that's a concern I have, which is, you know, an organization like West Texas Home Builders, I do think that's different. And I can see giving them more of a pass because they will give money to both sides of organizations. But it's these individuals and these massive checks that they give that I think people should be concerned about.
You know, it's an interesting dichotomy because it is legal. And the families that you're speaking about, the groups, the businesses, and so forth, they're exercising their legal rights as well to give money to particular candidates. Would you not take their money if they offered it to you?
Well, I don't really have any interest to, I mean, they haven't offered and I haven't asked, because I think that some of it is that it really calls into question. I think, as I said, those large tech checks, I think they buy at a minimum access, and I think that they probably influence votes. And I think if you look at my opponent's voting record, and you'll see that, you know, when she's in that area, she tends to vote in that direction. And so that'd be the concern I'd have, whereas, you know, her average donation, $1,000. My average donation, $150.
I'm very fond of saying that money doesn't always win elections. If it did, then Carly Fioroni and Meg Whitman would be in office. They're not, and they outspent their opponents. What are you going to do the next 10 days?
Well, I'm going to continue to really press the issue every day of just saying, you know, give me a chance. Listen to me. I have a news conference scheduled for Tuesday at my office at 11 o'clock, and I'm going to present the facts. And that's the thing, is that...
What kind of facts are you going to present?
The fact that when you look at the analysis of my opponent's campaign contributors, that 87% of it comes from a very narrow group of backers, of real estate people, developers, and bankers. You look at mine, it's 20% to professionals, CPAs, lawyers, it's 19% retired, and it's 19% my family, because, you know, when you do something like this, you got to rattle the cup around the dinner table and get all that you can. And those are big differences in terms of who we represent.
What's going to be, as far as you're concerned, we talked about power, we talked about water and so forth. Talk a little bit about education. More kids are moving into Lubbock. The schools are getting bigger. They're expanding. Bond elections and so forth. What do you see as the future of the education system here in West Texas, as far as 50% now, I think, in Texas are Hispanic students?
You know, I would say, I would wonder if Lubbock would even be here if it wasn't for Texas Tech being established back in the 20s. And so the same holds true today. Education is the way out for us. I think it's a way to get technology in here. And instead of getting a bunch of minimum wage jobs, it's a way to get good jobs when we have like the new wind studies program at Texas Tech. I'm proposing a desalination plant to technology push it, starting at first through the university and moving out into the public sector. And that's the key to the future, because if we don't educate people and give them a chance to get up, well, then, yeah, we're going to house them. We're going to house them in $45,000 a year prison cells, and they're going to end up with the scourge of drugs and all these other problems. And so that's the way out. And yet it's one of those things where you have to invest on the front end to get it on the back end. And so we want to be frugal about how we do it, but we really have to do it.
Before we get to tell listeners how they can get in touch with you and learn more about your campaign and so forth and campaign events, I want to do kind of a lightning round of some subjects for you with different things that are kind of hitting the fan right now in Lubbock. Real quickly, the monorail.
Haven't got to read up much, but I think it's probably a bad idea. Will cost a fortune if you look at West Virginia and how much money they spent. I just don't see how it would work.
Well, that's pretty direct.
I, in my job as a psychologist, I get paid by the hour, so I'm quick.
Bond elections, you support bond elections when they're voted for by people. It doesn't seem like, I mean, it's the will of the people. If they either pass or they don't pass, the alternative is raising taxes. Where do you stand on taxes?
I think that I like bringing it to the people and just saying, do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea? Because I'm the representative of the people. So I think that what I'll do is that I want to form an opinion about it and then do my best to lobby for what I think is the best position. But I've got to work with what people tell me is their desire. And so if it's 51% says this is the direction they want to go, then that's their will.
Downtown redevelopment.
I think that it's a question of priorities. That so do we put something like the monorail in, or do we spend a bunch of money on putting trees down there, or do we find ways to provide water and keep our electric rates down? It's not that I'm against it. I just think that you've got to decide where do you get your bang for the buck?
Outer loop.
Lubbock's going that direction. I think that we need to build it out there. But again, part of my concern is how much is this going to benefit developers? And so we want to make sure that their role is one where they pony up at the same time to help develop projects like that, because it does improve the city. And at some point, to make it go all the way around, I think it would be a good idea.
In the time we got left, give me your one-minute elevator pitch why people in District 5 should vote for you.
Because, folks, you guys, you know me, you know my family. We've been here lots of years. I think I bring a good approach to it and a studied approach. You can find me. My opponent is somewhere in the shadows. We may need to send out DPS to find her. But I'm here. I'm available. If you call me, I call you back. And I think communication and transparency are key. And so if you want to find out more about me, you can go to carforlubbock.com. And I'm also on Facebook. So read up on me and don't just sit quiet and let somebody else steal the show.
What are you going to do on Tuesday? It sounds like you're going to call out big money in this campaign. Is that an accurate description?
Well, I think big money, but also the appearance and possible influence of crony capitalism, that we got people who are putting down big bucks, and I think there's an expectation about what do you get for that kind of money.
You think this town is controlled politically by a few people?
Yes.
All right. Well, Dr. Carr, thank you for coming in this afternoon. It's been great to meet you.